Hi there, I'm Juliet Nichols, the founder and director of Pineapple Audio Production, and you're listening to the Podcasting Playbook. We're really lucky to be supported by some incredible businesses at Pineapple, so I just want to take a minute here to thank House of Kalmar, a self-care brand all about empowering you to reconnect with yourself. I tried their Love Bath Oil recently, and it is beautiful. We're also working on a podcast for them, so watch this space. And Audio Boom, one of the leading podcast publishers who help you get your podcast to Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you listen to podcasts. We use them for tons of our content distribution, so thank you very much. We are huge, huge fans. On today's episode, we are very, very excited to have Miranda Kane with us. Miranda presents Sex and Relationships podcast, Smut Drop, for metro.co.uk, and we produce it here at Pineapple. But it's not all she does. She was a plus-sized sex worker for over 10 years and has written and starred in her very own Audible series, amongst many, many other things. So, hi, Miranda. Would you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get on to today's topics.
Hi, I'm Miranda Kane, and I am a comedian, performer, and writer, and I mainly talk about stuff like sex worker rights and fat bias. Oh, that sounds very boring. No.
No, that doesn't sound boring. That sounds like a lot of really interesting and different stuff though, Miri. I actually genuinely don't think we've ever done this. In the years and years that we've worked together, and we've probably worked together for what?
Five years.
I don't know if we've ever actually sat down and been like, how did you end up doing all this like crazy, miraculous stuff that you do? And it is really interesting how it all comes together.
Oh.
How did you get here? How did you end up here?
So back in the day, I grew up in quite a small town and I started studying drama and acting. I knew that I always wanted to go into it. I knew that I always wanted to go into like performing and I loved it. But on my last day of studying, I did drama at college. And on my last day, my tutor turned round to me and said, oh, but of course, you know, there are no plus size leading ladies. And it was like,
What a kick in the teeth.
It was. And it sort of set me on a bit of a different path because I'd always thought, right, well, I'll go from college to drama school to being an actress. And then that sort of set me back to going, oh, right, so I'll try working backstage. Because I knew that I'd always been quite fascinated. Like where my college was on the campus, it was like the performing arts campus. And so on one side of the car park, on one side of the smoking area, you had all the actors. And on the other side, you had all the people doing the BTEC in media. And they were so cool. They always looked so cool. They're always wandering around with gaffer tape and cameras and microphones. So I'd seen them and we'd sort of like, you know, looked towards the other sides of the tracks. And I thought, well, okay, I'll go back to college. And this time I'll do media instead. I'll do all the backstage stuff. And that was where I started doing more in radio because it had its own radio station. And I loved it. I just really, really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed all being backstage. I really enjoyed doing the directing and the writing and everything. So that was why I moved up to London so I could do more in radio. So I wanted to be a radio producer to begin with because I just had my confidence knocked out of me. So I moved up to London, but as I started doing work experience for different radio stations, I saw lots of people who would be on the same kind of intern program as me and doing where I'd been doing all the work and not, you know, where I'd been doing lots of work for them, but I wasn't very good at coming forward and saying it. But these other people, they knew how to work the system. This sounds very bitter.
Yeah.
But they were the ones who were getting the job. Like for me, I would be told, oh, yeah, you're really good, but do you want to be our receptionist? We need a receptionist because you're bubbly. And it's just like, because it seems like it's going to be a job in media. But in the meantime, I'm watching, lest we say, skinnier people getting all the jobs in production. But I'd still end up doing their job because I knew how to do their job. But I also knew how to be a receptionist. And I just got quite like bitter and I, you know, I didn't like who I was becoming and what was happening to me. And I was also in London. It was my first time living there. I didn't know anyone. So I started going on to all the dating apps and everything. And that was when I discovered that men liked plus size women and they like women who were bigger. And it's a very small little rabbit hole to go from there to finding people who are doing like plus size modeling online. And then you could see plus size escorts. And I just realized that I'd been doing something that I could have been getting paid for. And so just this culmination of hating my job, hating seeing people who were smaller than me, hating seeing fat bias happening in the world. And, you know, and this job where, oh, actually my size worked for me and also I could get more money. And that kind of all culminated in me going into sex work. And I did that, and that has been very heavily documented. I think I've now officially talked about sex work longer than I was doing sex work. So I think that's quite a miraculous state of affairs. I'm really hanging in there.
Use your experiences, Miri. That's what they say.
Exactly. USP, isn't it?
And you make it sound like such a natural process, really, yeah. From just being on the dating app.
Thank you.
I like it.
Yeah. I do drive.
Makes sense.
I do drive. But that, ironically, that 10 years of doing sex work and then going, right, well, now I've got my confidence up. I want to go back into performing. I want to go back and do what I wanted to do all along. That gave me the confidence to then do comedy, because I think I was just listening to a podcast, actually, that was saying, well, one of the things that they said was that there's no leading person in stand-up. There's no parts, so you can stand up there and you can be yourself, and it doesn't matter who you are, what you look like, what your story is, you're just there, and it's a, like a meritocracy rather than any other kind of performing. So I really, that was what really drew me into doing stand-up, and also it was just an excellent chance to show off, which really I think all along has been my motivation. I've just wanted a chance to stand up and show off in front of people, and that was what stand-up allowed me to do. And then I did a comedy course, I did the usual open mic circuit, but I was making up stories. I was like, oh, my terrible dating life, my life in general. Oh, isn't it terrible being in your 20s? But actually, what I really wanted to talk about was all these like time wasters and useless clients and funny stories and what it was like to be a plus size sex worker and what my friends who were going through, who were also sex workers, what they were going through. And so I randomly signed up to do like the Camden Fringe for an hour. That was my first show. Someone there saw it and said, one of my friends, I was on the comedy course, she said, you've got to take this up to Edinburgh. You must. And she became a kind of part-time producer, made some phone calls. We went to Edinburgh for a week. We came back, a proper producer wanted to do something with it. He developed it. And I did like a proper show the next year, The Coin Operator Girl. And we had like an absolute, we had 5-star reviews. It was a real, like, you know, a real crowd thing. If anything, we were on the free fringe, but we were getting packed audiences every day because people just wanted to know the story. And we got, and to get like good reviews, like it's one thing having a story, but to do it well and to do it properly is, you know, very different. So that gave me the confidence to go, okay, so this is a story that people want to hear, and this is something that I think I'm quite good at doing. And from there, it was just a question of putting my nose to the grind, saying yes to as many opportunities that came up. And eventually we got the Audible competition entry in And that was what started Slaving Away. Slaving Away, I was doing the PR for Slaving Away, and the Metro wanted me to write a blog. So I started writing a blog for the Metro. They liked it. They let me do more blogs. And then when they said they wanted to do a sex podcast, they were like, well, who's the sex person who we've got on staff? And it was me. It was little Mary Kane. And now
the sex person. The sex I love it.
And now 5 years later, and I'm still doing podcasts for them. So yeah, that has been my journey. You did only want a couple of lines, didn't you? That was
You have had some adventures, and I knew about some of that, but not all of it. And wow, to go from, you know, somebody literally telling you this is not gonna happen.
Yeah.
To actually, you did make it happen very much in your own way.
Yeah.
And I love that. It's there for a lot of people who have success, isn't it? That somebody says,
yeah,
no, you can't. And they go,
well,
I think I might.
That's been exactly my whole thing. Like as soon as he said to me, oh, there's no big leading ladies, that's when I thought I'll make one. And that's really sort of been, that's why I write now. I very much am focused on writing at the moment, because I want there to be more bigger leading ladies on television and film and podcasts and audio allows you to do all that.
Yeah. And how amazing that you can be that inspirational person. I wonder what he'd say. I wonder if he knows. I wonder if he even remembers. The kind of influence he's had. But I can empathize. There are two people in my life who very early on in my career told me that I wouldn't be able to do some of the things that I've done. And I remember those moments distinctly, and I still think about them now. But it's in a positive way, yeah. I think. I mean, it's a shame that these people exist, but they do. And given the circumstances, I think it's given me a fire.
Yeah.
To prove those people wrong. And I can see that in you as well. You're one of the hardest working, most tenacious people I know, Miri. Like, in the 5 years I've known you, I don't think there's been a day when I've not known you come up with ideas or have things that you want to make happen and do it really, like, and not just the ideas, but you really make this stuff happen. Smut Drop obviously being one of them, which originally was obviously Good Sex, Bad Sex. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Tell me about the podcast. Like, tell me about its evolution. We've been involved in it together for a while now.
Yeah.
And it has evolved.
Do you know what? Just being on this side of the microphone, I realise how fidgety I am. I'm so sorry. Sorry. So you might have had some clippy bits on the microphone there, but this is so strange. Because I don't have to concentrate.
So, I love it.
So Good Sex, Bad Sex started, about it was quite a long time ago. And it was me and the lovely, esteemable, beautiful BB Lynch co-presenting. And we were just finding our place. It was my first time ever interviewing people. I had no idea what I was doing. And if it hadn't been for BB, then it probably would have just finished after six episodes. But I learned so much about interviewing people from her. Like, I would come in with my set list of questions and be like, well, this is what we're going to ask. And BB was just like laughing at me in my notebook and just going off on one and finding out all these weird tangents and you know, really getting into finding out what we needed to know about the guest. And I really enjoyed it. And it was such a good laugh. When we got good guests on, it was an absolute blast. I've found out so much about sex and relationships and about my own relationships and about my own interviewing techniques. So we were doing Good Sex, Bad Sex, but we were doing it for so many years without much happening with it that you can see it as a job. So you could just sort of sit back and go, look, the Metro are paying for it. We're getting the money. We'll just do our job, turn up and leave, and that's fine. But I really love something that I can get my teeth into, that I can be passionate about. I don't want to just turn up and do the job and go home. I want to do a great job, and I want people to see that it's a great job. And I want to, you know, be passionate about it and feel passionate about it. And I want other people to learn from it. I think that's kind of part of the drama training. We were always taught that theatre should seek to change the world and not to show it. And that's something that's been with me, you know, when I did stand-up. It was like, well, I'm doing stand-up because I want to change people's opinions about sex workers. So when I'm doing something like the podcast, I want people to learn from it. But that means that people have to know that it exists. So when the Metro had a change of staff, and when we went to them and said, we want to rebrand it, we want a big shake up, it felt like a whole new, it could be a new start. So we rebranded it, relaunched it as the Smut Drop. Bibi went to do Let's Get Frank. It was me and another co-host as it started with. And I really wanted it to be something young and funky. So where we'd had this sort of awful introduction music, I don't know whether you remember the old Good Sex introduction music. I hated
it. I do. Oh. In fact, maybe we can just play a little clip
no!
of that.
Oh my gosh.
God.
I mean, the Smut Drop, the branding for the Smut Drop is so different. It's this neon fun kind of, oh, does it look like slut or smut? Power lyrics and girls screamo band. Like, yeah.
And tell us a bit about the ethos for Smut Drop then. Like, what is, it's this, so the young and the kind of like exciting and the learning.
Yes.
That's definitely part of it. But what else is Smut Drop about?
Smut Drop is about getting out the stories that we don't hear, but really getting to grips with all the dirty, filthy parts of sex that you want to know about, but we don't talk about. So it's going to be awkward questions to people. It's going to be, you know, right, well, what was your life like in a thruple? Who was the top and who was the bottom? Like, really?
And that episode is well worth a listen for everybody, right?
Yeah.
But it's exactly like you say, it's educational. It's the stuff that we maybe would like watch a documentary on if it happened to come out. Like, you know, that we maybe wouldn't want to talk to our friends about, but we really want to know about.
Yeah.
And with experts involved and with you, Miri, like giving it that lightness and the like humorous, like comedy value and the point is, I think you make it okay to talk about this stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think like being able to throw in my own experiences of sex really helps. And my experiences of sex aren't perfect. They're always, something's always gone wrong. Do you know what I mean? Because it always does. You don't do role play and everyone sticks to their lines. You don't.
What, you're saying that sex shouldn't be like porn?
I know.
Sorry?
It's so weird. It's so weird. It shouldn't be like porn or a Ryan Gosling movie. It should just be, it's this weird, funny, like happy thing. It's so, and that's why the people that I love talking to on the Smut Drop are always sex practitioners. So dominatrixes, submissives, people who've got kink, people who specialize in kinks, people who will come on and talk about how you can practice things in a safe, sane and consensual way. And they're also just like, but it's just at the end of the day, it's just about having a laugh. You know, it's talking about your body's doing this lovely squishy thing. And
I love it. And you know what? You're bringing out right now in this moment, you're bringing out exactly what you bring into the presenting side of Smut Drop, like no doubt about it. But it intrigues me in a way because I'm not sure I knew that you had, I mean, it makes perfect sense, don't get me wrong, but I'm not sure I knew that you had the production training that you had, and it comes through. Like you facilitate that stuff as part of it. So when you're looking at the production side of it, what do you think is important about that? Like I think it's clear what makes a good presenter from what we've just been talking about.
Yeah.
It's that openness, it's that humor, it's the realism that you bring. But what about the production side of things? Like, what do you think makes a good producer?
A good producer, they need to know. I think for a producer, it's kind of the delegation of information. So me as a presenter, what do I need to know? And what do I want to know versus what do you need to tell me? You know, so mm-hmm. I don't need to know that you're going to be editing doing this, that, and the other behind the scenes. But what I do need to know is, when's it going to be uploaded? What's the link I can point people to on social media? And that kind of trick. But I also, you know me, like, you also know that I want to know certain bits of information being told to the guests or to the metro, you know, to the people who are paying us. It's knowing what I need to be told versus what you know. Like a producer should be like a swan, isn't it? I'm sure you've heard this and you know all this. It should be this.
It's so true.
It's so true though. And I cannot understate it, because you should be this lovely gliding force that's calming to me as a presenter. I should be able to know it's fine. Juliet's got everything under control. And in the meantime, your little legs are paddling like against the waves. But I don't need to know that, because I'm already focused on my thing. And, you know, it's trust. It is all about trust. I did a very, very, when it comes to production, oh my God, I did this absolutely crazy training, this crazy training program in the middle of Yorkshire in a place called Bubworth. And if anyone else went there, then it's going to give them PTSD, because we were all taught by this crazy bloke who is just like, it's about trust. If you can't trust each other, then you're just going to make shit. And it's so true. And honesty leads to trust. Trust leads to respect, and respect leads to friendship. And that started off as something that I used in my career and in production and in training, but is actually, when I look back on some of the biggest friendships in my life, that's actually something that's really pertinent to me. And so when someone is honest with me, on the production side and says, oh, we can do this, but we can't do that, and it's not just, you know, fuzzy things, then I know I can trust them. And when I can trust them, I can respect them. And when I respect them, then we're friends. You know, it's not just, you don't just get my respect automatically, but it doesn't take much to get my respect. All it takes is honesty so that I can trust you. And that's a huge thing for me. So I think when it comes to the production side, just be honest with what you can and you can't achieve, so that I can then trust what is going on backstage. And then that is a huge thing off my mind.
I really love that, Miri. Honestly, I think that is, like you say, poignant for life, but also for production team. And on the Smut Drop, we've had various iterations of producers, haven't we?
Yeah.
And it's been Pineapple for a while now. At one stage, it was you and I. We've had Georgia. And now you've got a combo of myself and Kelsey. From my experience, I think Kelsey brings a swan-like nature.
Yeah.
What you were saying feels very true to that.
Yeah, exactly. I know she knows what to tell me so that I can do something on my end, but I won't panic about it. That's the key. Because if someone's giving me too much information, I start panicking. I'm like, right, what do I need to do? And it could be that they're just saying stuff to me that's just keeping me in the loop. But it's knowing the other person who you're working with. It's knowing them enough to know, okay, I know what I'm doing, but she doesn't need to know that, because there's nothing in that that Miranda needs to worry about. Miranda just needs to worry about the dates that this is happening and the time. You know, it's knowing the information you need to filter through, because if you've worked with you, well, you know, you've worked with me, that I am one of those people that will go, right, well, what do I need to do to take control of this situation to get it going?
Yeah, I would say now you probably go into producer mode, actually, Miri. Now, knowing what I now know, you're like, right, let's solve this situation. When actually, that's not necessarily what you need to be doing. You need to focus on speaking to the guest or thinking about your like the essence of what you've got to do. So yeah, I hear you. But it feels like we've got that to a place where that kind of works.
Definitely.
It's good to reflect on.
That's where the honesty and the trust and the that's where the trust comes into play. Because if I don't trust that that work's going to get done, then I go into producer mode. Because everything that I've done has been very self-produced. I went to Edinburgh by myself. I've been to Australia fringes by myself. This and the Audible production has been the only times that I've worked with producers where it hasn't been all on me. So,
yeah,
you know, it's been that relinquishing that control has been a joy, but B, takes us, you know, a fine balance to find out where that begins and ends. And it's interesting to me because I know working with other people who have worked with producers who, you know, come from a broadcasting background rather than a self-produced background. And they're just like, oh, the producer will do that. And I'm like, what is this? What are you talking about?
Yeah. Do you know what? But it makes perfect sense. And I think it's a trust thing on both sides, isn't it? And that's the nice thing about you and I having known each other for such a long time is we've had, you know, hundreds of conversations where we've figured these things out and we're still figuring it out. Of course, it's always an ongoing thing. But where those conversations have happened, it's been like, let's adjust. How can we get this right? How can we make sure that the balance is right? And that's it, isn't it? That's how you kind of grow.
That's it. I know I can trust to go to you and just say, oh, I'm having a bit of a problem with, you know, God forbid if I'm having a problem with a producer or something. I know I can go to you, but I know what you're going to do about it. I know that you're going to talk about it. I know that I can go to you guys and you know, you can swan away and you can do all the uphill paddling.
Yeah, that also works both ways, doesn't it? Because thinking about it, Miri, 1,000,000% would I trust that if you say you're going to do something or you want to make something happen, you are going to make it happen. You're going to do it. And that's awesome. That's awesome. And it is actually quite rare.
Thank you.
In terms of podcasts then, because you've done a few different things and a few different iterations of this and, you know, I know you have an interest in podcasts. What is it that you think makes a podcast a, quote, good podcast versus something that's going to fall by the wayside or disappear or not last 5 years or longer in different iterations?
You have to have a great story, and the great story isn't always going to come from you. So if you are willing to get a knife, split yourself open, pull out all your insides and be able to broadcast that week after week.
That makes it sound simple.
I know. No, I think because I've listened to podcasts where the host has come on and they interview a guest every week and it's like, right, well, that's fine, but that's a bit boring. The podcasts that I love are the ones where it's my best friend, the ones where it feels like it's my best friend talking and I know them, I know what they're into, I know what their lives are like. And yeah, and then they talk to someone else. But, you know, first of all, they've let me into their life. You know, a podcast is your best friend in your pocket. And that's what I want from an interview type podcast. Like I love podcasts as well that are very, that are journalistic, that have a story to tell, but that's different to the kind of podcast that we do. So I know that when it comes to listeners on Smut Drop, what I want to do is make sure that they know me, that they're in safe hands, and that we've got a story to tell together. Because it can be difficult when you're setting up your podcast. What do you want to do? What do you want to tell? What do you want to say? Because we can't all be This American Life. Do you know what I mean? We don't all have a massive team of, you know, Peabody winning journalists out there. So when you're doing your podcast, it's not just you going and talking to people who you find interesting. It's going to be you talking to your listeners and saying, it's me again. How are you? Okay, look, I found this really interesting person. Do you want to come and speak to them with me? But it's, you're with that audience. So I think but that takes you. I was talking to someone on the podcast the other day and she was super nervous. And I was like, don't worry, we'll just take 5 minutes. What's wrong? And she started to say, I've got all these stats in front of me and I'm just a bit worried about, you know, am I going to have the right numbers? And I was like, close them all. I don't want to talk to you about stats. I can look at stats. If people want to know about stats and statistics and figures, they're going to go on they can go online. And also, like, I always have a bit of a problem with stats anyway, when especially when it comes to sex and relationships, because you don't get the full story from stats at all.
Like, yeah, who's telling the truth on those surveys?
Exactly. And it'll be like, oh, Love Honey did a survey from 2,000 of their customers. Yeah, if you're going to be a Love Honey customer, yeah, of course you're going to be buying a sex toy every day. Come on. And I was just like, just close all your stats and let's just talk about you, because your voice and your story, I'm never going to get that anywhere else. So let's talk about you and let's just put it into your own life perspective. And she calmed down and I calmed down and we had a really good fun podcast after that. So for me, it is about, you know, being open and being honest. You can't sit behind a figure. You can't do that. You have to be willing to put your voice out there.
Yeah, I agree. I was talking at a conference the other day, actually, and it came up, the question, of course, is podcasting dead? You know, is it oversaturated, all that jazz? And one of the things that came out of it was exactly that. There are obviously a lot of podcasts out there, but it's the ones that are authentic. It's the ones that build a relationship. It's the ones that, like you say, become that regular friend. Like Wednesday morning, I know I'm going to hear from Miranda and I'm going to hear something fun that makes me laugh and that opens my eyes a little bit. And, you know, it's that really. And I can speak on a personal level from whenever we did meet all those years ago, the education that I've had from you. And I remember distinctly being in the room in those first few recordings and just being bright red, so awkward. I was like, I don't know where to look. This conversation is not comfortable for me. I don't know. I know nothing about this. Oh my God, eyes wide open, naivety completely shot. So as a listener, I really think that you do that. Just a moment of appreciation for you on a personal
Thank
level.
Thank you.
It's true. And I'm sure that lots of listeners would feel the same.
Yeah. I feel like you could talk to any erotic wrestler and chicken boy now without breaking into a blush. You'll be absolutely.
Oh, good God. Do you know what? I would back myself on that, and I'm sure it's all thanks to you.
Yeah, you know so much now about things you never knew you wanted to know about. So
you know what? It's very true, in the best possible way. In the best possible way. Okay, so it's traditional to try and pass on some wisdom at the end of this podcast. So if you had a lesson to share, Miri, and I know you've shared actually quite a lot of wisdom the last half hour or so, but if you had one sort of thing to pass on from like either your life or your career or podcasting, what would you share?
I would share find your voice. And I know this might be something that people talk about a lot that you've probably heard before, but finding your voice has been, it's so important, because no one else has had your story, and you might look around and see what people are doing on social media or on other podcasts or on any other form of media and think, oh, I want to do that. But no one else can do you. You don't have to be bright and bubbly and funny and interesting and intriguing. My voice is slightly pissed off. My voice is someone who's slightly pissed off and takes the piss all the time. And I love it. And I've tried being, you know, oh, hey, it's just me and I'm talking about sex work stuff. And it's not like when you start just looking at who you are and looking at what you want to say, that's what people will want to listen to. So find your voice. One of those things that I learned really early on in comedy, and I got quite pressurized because I was like, oh, how do you do it? What do you do? What? And it was only when I dropped my act, when I got frustrated and infuriated, that when I started answering emails with a bit more of an edge, when I started tweeting with a bit more of a pissed off edge, and it was like, and people are laughing and I'm laughing at myself and I'm like, oh, this is me. This is what I enjoy doing. When I talk to people on a podcast and, you know, like with the Thruple one, and sometimes when I've got guests on and I don't know much about them, that's when I end up having the most fun. Like, and you know, when you get to talk to someone, like with Jordan, one of my favorite questions that I asked him was, so when you're a gay bloke and you've done the, you've presented on the main stage at Manchester Pride, and you come off stage, just how much cock are you swimming in? And
and he answers it with honesty. Yeah. I mean, really?
But it's just stuff like that, like just being able to be silly, which I think got beaten out of me when you learn stuff at university and you learn stuff in courses, it can get a bit beaten out of you. But that is the thing that you've got to take on. That is the thing. That is when I say you've got to stick a dagger inside yourself and rip your heart open. That is where you'll find your voice. And that is the thing that people are going to want to hear.
It sounds like what you're saying is be yourself.
Yeah, it is. But it's knowing how to put that across to people. Because I could, you know, when you talk about being yourself, you're like, well, I am. I wake up as myself. But how are you expressing that? What are you doing? What are the limits? Where can you go? And there are no limits. The more you do it, the better you'll be at it.
I love that. Sounds like it's very good advice for podcasting, audio, and just life in general. So thank you so much, Miri. I really appreciate you taking the time, genuinely.
Oh, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you, Juliet.
Thank you so much, Miranda, for being our guest on the Podcasting Playbook. And thank you for tuning in and getting to know a little bit more about the work that we do at Pineapple. Don't forget to follow and review the podcast. It really helps people to find us. And we will see you next time. Bye for now.